Center will talk about AVX Paranode 12 in FFmpeg. He's also the co-organizer of this dev room. Please welcome Kiran.
So I'm going to be talking about AVX 512 in FFmpeg. What is AVX 512? AVX stands for Advanced Vector Extensions. There'll be a lot of acronyms and jargon, unfortunately, in this one, but I will try and explain all of them. So AVX 512 is a relatively new single instruction, multiple data instruction set for Intel CPUs from about 2017, and more recently in the last 6 months or so with AMD CPUs. In particular, it has a larger 512-bit register size, many new instructions, which we'll talk about in a minute, op masks, which we'll talk about in a minute, comparisons, which are quite new, and also lots of other things that are not so interesting in multimedia, cryptography, neural networks, and I'm sure there are other people at FOSDEM who could talk a lot more about these kind of things. As I mentioned, lots of fancy words, but the thing to bear in mind is in FFmpeg, high schoolers have gone and written assembly. This is heavily jargon-centric. It sounds complicated, but actually quite a big, reasonable chunk of assembly in FFmpeg has been written by people who are in high school. Why is this relevant now? I've mentioned AVX 512 has been around since 2017, so why it's 2023? Well, Skylake was the first CPU generation from Intel to have AVX 512 support, but it had very large performance throttling when you used them, so your effective CPU capability speed went down quite dramatically. And so this was fine if you were doing high-performance computing in academia, for example, like fluid dynamics, where you were using these instructions 100% of the time. That was fine. But in multimedia, it's a mixture of assembly and C code, where you're not necessarily always using these instructions. So this relative remained sort of unused for the last couple of years. You could still use these new instructions, though, with the smaller register sizes, and I'll show an example of this later. But the first Intel CPUs not to have such throttling were the Ice Lake 10th and 11th gen Intel CPUs. They were the first to have no throttling, and this meant these ZMM-based instructions could be first-class citizens. How to get started? One of the tricky things as well in the last few years has been actually getting access to devices that have this, and unfortunately Intel have not made it easy. From their 12th generation CPUs, they've actually removed support in consumer equipment. It's still available on AMD Zen 4 CPUs, though. And if using the cloud is your kind of thing, available also from many cloud providers in the server CPU range, such as AWS or others. Personally, I think the easiest way is to buy an 11th generation Intel NUC. That's what I did for FFmpeg. I bought two of them for the project and host them. It's the easiest way. It's only a few hundred euros. It's quiet, fits under your desk. And that's the easiest way to get started. You get a full AVX 512 stack. So let's look at some of the existing work in multimedia that's using AVX 512. And probably most importantly, we had a sort of introduction from JB earlier today, the David project, which is an AV1 decoder. This added AVX 512 support, I think, a year or two ago. It's particularly beneficial in AV1 because AV1 has large block sizes, sort of in comparison to more traditional standards, traditional codecs like H.264 and others, which are smaller. So AVX 512 in David gave, I think, 10 to 20% overall, so not just the functions themselves, the overall decode performance was improved. And it's actually been a running topic, which is quite interesting, over today is in FFmpeg that we use, and David, and also we use this classic FFmpeg X264 approach to assembly, which is no intrinsics, no inline assembly, no special SIMD sort of libraries to make life easier. It's raw assembly language, and I'll show some examples of that. And also, we don't also compile them in and force you to have a particular CPU generation. I know this is quite controversial. I think it's MongoDB, for example, they forced 1 year a particular CPU generation, and this was super controversial because not everybody had that. So what we do in FFmpeg is we detect CPU capabilities, and I'll show the function in a minute, and then we use function pointers, so we set them once at the beginning, and therefore the overhead of doing that measurement is done, doing the capabilities is checked once, and then those function pointers are executed after that. And unfortunately, though, there's on Intel, there's a very messy Venn diagram of capabilities. But in practice, we really, so far, they may change their mind, but care about these kind of two things. So these are the CPU flags you get in FFmpeg. There are others, but the AVX-512 related ones are, broadly speaking, legacy Skylake. And the newer ICL I put in bold for Ice Lake. But you can see there are actually a lot of different subcategories in there. But in practice, it's at the moment one or the other. But as I mentioned, Intel are very keen on adding and removing features and possibly even charging your subscription for certain features is one of their new ideas. So it could be that newer additions to this are subscription-based, or you buy it and pay for it later, or something much more complicated. But so who knows? So I guess, unfortunately, there's some sort of dependency in explaining a few of the topics and some of the benefits without explaining some of the backstory. So historically, in old AVX, you had these older 256-bit registers. And these were split in practice into lanes. So in practice, you've got 228-bit lanes. And instructions, broadly speaking, operated in these lanes. So if you ran an instruction, it worked on data, and it was actually quite difficult. It was possible, but difficult to move data between these lanes. And it's one of the historical limitations on existing AVX and AVX2 code that we have in FFmpeg is lane crossing and all sorts of trickery that essentially costs CPU cycles to take up this time. That takes time to compensate for the lanes. I have to talk a bit about K-mask registers as well. So AVX-512 adds this new set of registers called K-masks, K0 to K7. And this allows the destination register to remain unchanged. So for example, underneath, you could have an addition, but actually it's a simple case, and you wouldn't, obviously you could just add 0 and it's unchanged, but you could actually use the K-mask to say, actually, I don't want addition to be applied to these elements. I want this just to be a pure pass-through. Or you could even force some of the elements to 0 if you wanted to. There's a specific, I think it's a flag that lets you do that. And there's a whole set of new instructions to go and manipulate these K-mask registers. And certainly David in particular makes good use of K-masks. So now that I've sort of explained some of the backstory, I think it's fair to say one of the most important instructions, if not the most important instruction, is our shuffles in multimedia. Also known as permutes, and there might be a technical difference between a shuffle and a permute. Someone might be able to correct me. There might be some mathematical difference. But these are the most important, or one of the most important instructions in multimedia. And as you can see on the right, basically shuffles let you have various bits of data and rearrange them in any way that you want, duplicate them, as you can see, or even set individual elements to 0. And this is, for example, famously, one use case of this is in the zigzag scan of FFmpeg, which groups larger coefficients in a block together. But the way that that's done is via a zigzag scan. The thing about vpermb, which is the new AVX-512 instruction, is it lets you cross a lane. This wasn't something that was possible in before. And as I'll show you later, this makes things substantially faster in many cases. PSHFB, probably one of the most commonly used instructions in all of open source multimedia. You do git grep, PSHFB, there'll be a huge, you know, that your screen will be full of PSHFBs. They're used everywhere in open source multimedia. PSHFB had a kind of useful benefit that if you set the index to -1, you had automatically did a zeroing out. With vpermb, this isn't the case. You have to actually use k-masks to do that. So that just makes things slightly more complicated. There's all sorts of other interesting permutes that AVX-512 offers. I think David also, again, makes good use of his vperm2b. So you can actually not just have one set of data, you can actually permute from two different registers. So you could have IJK, et cetera, in a different register, and your output could be a mixture of both of those. So that's kind of interesting. Variable shifts. You have now variable right shifts. So I've given the example of a VPSRLVW, logical right shift, and VPSLVW, variable left shift, logical. Big letter soup, quite confusing. In fact, when writing this slide, I misspelt the word shift. You can have a think about how that may have been spelt. Thankfully, the rehearsals and work picked this up. But this word soup is exceptionally confusing both when writing slides and writing code, it seems. So historically, to do variable shifts, so if you want to take, obviously, just a step back, take an element and shift each element by a different amount, this was quite complicated. There's various bits of trickery, various idioms that people use to try and emulate that, but they had limitations. I think, for example, you were not shifting by zero, possibly wasn't allowed in one of the various bits of trickery. And so if you needed a zero shift, you had to do it a different way, et cetera, et cetera. But now you have this variable shift and it's all usable. Equally on the left shift, the naive way of doing an emulated left shift is just a multiply, but these instructions are actually faster than a multiply, so there's still some benefit. VP turnlog D, this is, I think no presentation about AVX 512 could not fail to mention VP turnlog D. This instruction is literally a kitchen sink. It's quite remarkable in what it can actually do. You can literally program a truth table within an individual instruction itself, and in theory could replace up to 8 different instructions. So you could do a whole presentation on VP turnlog D. I thought it'd be best to try and pick one of the simplest ones, which is a ternary operation. So this is a bitwise equivalent to the C ternary operation. So for in each register, each bit is iterated through. And you can see, for example, the ternary operation. So if that bit set choose this or versus this, and you can see the output of that is that. And so essentially it's a bitwise operation of ZM0 is equal to ZM0 ? ZM1 ZM2, but on a bitwise level. And there's all sorts of other interesting things you can do. And this article is very good. It shows all sorts of interesting things you can do, bit selects, all sorts of various different operations that you can do, multiple XORs, for example. So yeah, also very interesting. So let's look at a real world example. I don't know how well you can see that. I was hoping the dark mode would actually make life easier, but maybe it's made things worse. But I'll talk about some of the, oh, is it a mouse? Can you see the mouse? No, you can't, because the mouse on a Mac is dark. But anyway, this is v210enc. It's probably one of the most simplest assembly functions in FFmpeg, but what it does is it takes 3 8-bit samples from different memory locations. It sort of, as part of its work, extends to 10 bits and then packs those 3 10-bit words into 32 bits. So what's interesting in this function is we're already starting to do lane crossing that wasn't possible before. So we load the Y samples, so the Luma samples, into the lower 256 bits. We do the U section of the chroma into the third or the second, as if zero indexed, portion of the register. And then equally the same for the V. And then we do one, excuse me, and then one single V perm B can rearrange all of that in one go. This was a lot more complicated back in the olden days. PMAD sub SW is some trickery that unfortunately is not going to be enough time to explain, but eventually is a multiply and add, and we use that to emulate a shift. And then for the second element, in the 3 elements, we need to do a D word shift because it actually spans the middle. So then, we have sort of conflicting bits in each register. So how do we do a bit selection? And this was quite I think it's a 2 or 3 even operand, 2, 3 or 3 different instructions in the previous code. And this can now be done in a single VP turnlog D. So essentially C ternary B or A. So if bit C is set, choose the bit from B or choose it from A otherwise. And you'll see in a second that actually provides quite a big, well, certainly a measurable speed improvement. So these are the benchmarks. So this is, so I wanted to show a bit about how you can get benefits from AVX 512 even on the older hardware with the shorter existing registers. These are not scientifically benchmarked. I just ran them yesterday. When you do benchmarking, you should run them 10 or 100 of times, average them, do standard deviations, etc. But just for the simple case, You can see that the C code versus the AVX2 code is around 10 times faster. And you can see just by replacing, I think it's a set of two or three different PANs or various Boolean functions, you can get a measurable increase just with one instruction replacing three, even on the older YMM registers. But where the big gains come are on Ice Lake. You can see the C code versus the AVX512 ICL, there's a huge difference. So by using VPermB and the ZMM, you can already make the legacy AVX512 twice as fast. And if something was 10 times faster, that now becomes 20 times faster. And I often have to say that's not a multiply, that's a times. So it's a massive improvement. This was code that could, if you have a large resolution file, take up an entire CPU core, and now it takes essentially 5% of a core. It's really tiny. What AVX512 code is next? Anything really that's line-based or frame-based, such as filtering or scaling, I think the next thing we're working on is deinterlacing. Anything involving comparisons. I haven't really talked about comparisons, but there are bits of code that often need to do comparisons. That's going to be an obvious place for AVX512. Lots of places that do like triple Booleans, sort of multiple XORs or multiple XORs and ANDs, and I think it's almost always is possible to replace that with a VP10logD. Likewise, in the code base, there's various different idioms and trickery to try and emulate a variable left shift and right shift, or multiplies for the left shifts and trickery for the right shifts. This could be used with instructions to try and reduce that. Intel provides an official manual to all of this. It's very verbose, which is great in many cases because it provides really precise detail of how the instructions work, but unfortunately is not at all approachable. So there's a few websites that try and simplify the things. I think this website on officedaytime.com is some kind of Japanese website, but it's in English, that explains, it tries to group all the functions in some kind of, instructions in some kind of logical ordering, and that's kind of makes it a lot simpler to understand. So yeah, any questions? And hopefully I'll be able to answer them, but thankfully at FOSDEM there's always somebody with more knowledge than you in the room. I can't see where they are, but I did see them at one point. Thanks.
So any questions in the room? Yeah. Yes?
Regarding the direct assembly writing of AVX512, there's about 7,000 instructions of AVX512. Why? If you choose the direct assembly, then you essentially might miss out on potential instruction scheduling between different architectures. New compilers might schedule better, and you might get performance benefit in the future. So I know it's.
But then you have to ship a binary for each version. No, sorry, repeat the question.
So you have to write in intrinsics. That's what I'm saying. In order to.
The question is, the classic question, can the compiler do a better job than a human question? In David, certainly the register allocation has not been very good in compilers historically. David has shown this quite dramatically because it has its own custom ABI internally. And you wouldn't be able to do that with the compiler, like come up with your own internal ABI between functions. So there's certainly, 10% plus on individual function speed gains versus doing it in intrinsics. Some bits of some instructions are not available in intrinsics, like always. It's a compromise. Overall, it's been the way in FMPEG X264 for the last 10 years, and I think all intrinsics and inline assembly is banned, and there's only one or two bits left, and there's a very good reason why it needs to be there.
I have a mixed experience about this. I agree on the ideally assembly is better, but we had some code in intrinsics recompiled with the latest Clang 15,
yeah,
and we saw a 15% to 20% speed increase just for recompiling.
But did you try writing it to begin with in?
Yes, it wasn't written in.
Write it originally in assembly and compare, but it's. But so for example, some of this, some of the, oh sorry, you've gone to, but some of the, Some of the bit twizzling in there, for example, a compiler would never really have the understanding to do. In fact, I did try ChatGPT, and ChatGPT at least sort of understood a few of the concepts. It was quite interesting because not quite out of a day job, but I did ask ChatGPT to write this function, actually, just sort of to see what, and it did have some vague idea what was going on. It didn't need to sort of be helped, which was quite interesting. Yep.
Is there any collaboration between the multimedia, the people who write the codecs, and the guys writing the compiler, to tell them, look, perhaps you could target certain patterns?
So the question is there collaboration between people writing the compilers and multimedia community? Yes, in ARM in particular, I think. Is Martin here? No, Martin is not here, but Martin spends a lot of time talking to the compiler community and the linker community on mostly miscompilations is more his thing. And I think there is also some sharing of mostly around the C code, if the C code is badly miscompiled or thought about the wrong, the sort of thought of the wrong approach, because you can see actually this, and in some cases, in some versions of the compiler will really do a bad job on the C, and it can be 40, you know, the assembly can be 40 times faster, and that's, don't know if that's something you can really trust. If one day you change compiler version and a function that you thought was not, that was, you know, immeasurable, is now 40 times slower than it is. And then the question from the internet is, did you have the occasion to look at ARMv8 SVE vector instructions for FFmpeg? Wow, there's a surprise for this person, because the next speaker is going to be talking about this entire topic. Where is the next speaker? Is he here? Yeah. He's over there. And the next speaker here, Remy, will be talking about this entire topic. So,
another question in the room?
There's one.
Yeah, I was wondering, so obviously the runtime CPU capability detection and dispatching of the right functions is desirable. But I don't think it's necessarily contradictory to having some amount of abstraction. Like, have you, for instance, looked into the highway library that is being used in some places, that is trying to provide some kind of abstraction while still allowing to do compile time, runtime dispatch?
So the question was, have you looked into some of the abstraction libraries like Highway? That's trying to do a sort of compromise between runtime dispatch and abstraction. I think this question was already answered, I think, two presentations ago. Not with Highway, but I think with a different SIMD library. But there have been various approaches, LibOil, SIMD Easy, various different approaches. And again, the result from certainly FFmpeg X264 David has been write it by hand. It's written once, and you know. Almost certainly that it's going to be usable for a long time. I didn't really talk about it, but the abstraction, there is a lightweight abstraction layer in X264 and FFmpeg to try and basically to handle 32-bit, 64-bit, and to handle other things like the different ABI calls. The abstraction layer kind of handles some of the future proofing in that respect. But that's there's a blog post online from Ronald, if he's here, but he's not here. That explains some of this. It's another presentation in itself, unfortunately.
Another question, yes.
For your benchmark, do you know which optimization the C code was compiled to?
Question was, what optimizations were the C code compiled with? GCC 003. Varying versions of GCC. In FFmpeg test suite, there's all sorts, I think from GCC, there's a whole range depending on the build OS, but from 4 to 12, I think. And then maybe some people test nightly. I think Martin certainly tests nightly for ARM. I don't know if anyone tests nightly on x86. Some LVM as well. But again, I would be very surprised if the compiler would be able to come up with something, because like what a human wrote, because this is involving bit properties of the actual packing, and actually the trick with PMAD SW is a kind of trick to try and do a multiply and a zeroing at the same time, and it probably doesn't have the level of thinking to understand the bit patterns internally. Something like ChatGPT might one day, which would be quite interesting, but I don't think the compiler does.
The last question.
I'm just going to follow up on what you said. If you have a small algorithm, a small function like 10, 100 clients maybe, writing in assembly might be easy, but if you have a huge function, like a filter, a variance filter, or something, a DCT, writing it directly in assembly might take a long time. That's why originally we write it in C, and then we try to write it using intrinsics.
Yeah, so the question is a longer function might take a longer time to write in assembly compared to C or intrinsics. Yes, but there are DCTs in FFmpeg, and they're macroed, right? There's steps have macros to try and help that. Again, the abstraction layer also adds, I think, macros on top of what the normal assembler does in terms of macros. So the blog post explains, but swap is kind of interesting. It lets you swap registers, but then continue with them, and the layer just handles all of that internally. There's also just macros for like clipping. I think was on the example, but clip, don't worry about it. But clip is an example. So clip UB is a macro, and on the right target set, it will go and use the right clipping functions if they're available, for example. And there's a bunch of these, I think transpose, butterfly, there's a few others like that.
Thank you, Kiran.